Hello, my name is Chip Lang, and you are listening to Total EM. I have to say, we just came back from a conference. Actually, I am recording this as I just got home from the conference that I went to with AASPA, and they were so nice to invite a bunch of us down to talk all about ultrasound. And I did a whole thing on the EFAS exam. And EFAS exam, we use it all the time in emergency medicine. I use it all the time in emergency medicine. But as I'm teaching these students, there are a few things that I wanted to go back and talk a little bit more about. Now, one of them is the power slide, which is basically color for seeing lung sliding. That's something we're going to talk about separately in a podcast because I'm hoping that with one of my friends, Fritz Fuller, we'll be able to get him on to talk about this a little bit more because this is something that was just a really cool topic. And thanks to Fritz for coming up with some of the stuff that we were going to go over with it. Just seemed appropriate to wait until we could do it with him. But in the meantime, I did want to talk about some other things that came up in the conference and to help provide some resources and help give people a little more knowledge when it comes to using the EFAS properly. So when we do an EFAS, this is the extended focus assessment of sonography and trauma. The big difference is we're also adding some lung views in there, which the lung views, like I said, we're probably going to talk about that separately. But it's still something that I'm doing pretty much with every single scan. I'm going to include the lungs versus the traditional FAST exam, which is right upper quadrant, left upper quadrant, looking at the suprapubic region, and then looking at the heart. I'm adding in the lung part, and I'm specifically looking for both pneumothorax and hemothorax, which technically you would already see in some cases anyway, but this is just incorporating in a better way than we currently are doing it. Now, one of the first things to do is that it's usually a good idea if the person has already been supine to scan them first in the right upper quadrant, because this is going to get you a lot of the findings with free fluid early. And that free fluid early is something you want to see. So scan the right upper quadrant as soon as you get them over and you can get them in a spot where you can scan them. With that said, if they've been sitting up, and then you put them supine, you may want to do some other parts first before you get to that stage. And the reason why is because they will not have enough time to accumulate that free fluid that you need to really be able to hone in on that exam. Of course, because I am going kind of more in details on some specific stuff, we're going to include things in the show notes on the basics of doing a good EFAS exam. Another thing that I commonly see people screw up is when they're trying to look at the right upper quadrant or left upper quadrant, they're simply not getting far enough down in position. When this person's supine on the bed, basically your hand is going to be pressing on the bed, especially if you're doing the traditional approach where you're leaning over to do your left upper quadrant view. It really needs to be that your knuckles are on the bed. If your knuckles aren't on the bed, most likely you're not doing it right. And it's a subtle skill to pick that up, but it's one you have to know. The reason why I mention this is because if you scan too high, you're not going to be able to see it in time, or you're going to take way too long to scan the images you need. The other thing is too, is that be very careful about when you say negative versus inconclusive exam. An inconclusive exam is when you cannot see all the structures that you need to see, whether that's blocked for one reason or another. I will explain usually if it's just in one view, what part's inconclusive and why. With negative exams, though, I was able to see all the structures I needed to see. And usually I'm going to repeat those scans if possible, especially if I have a high index of suspicion already. But I'm using the EFAS exam as another part of the big clinical picture. So I'm not using it by itself usually. I'm usually using it in conjunction with other things. The other thing to keep in mind when you're looking at these upper quadrant views is that it can be really subtle, the blood at first. And that's part of the reason why you want to do these repeat exams, especially if you're having issues with artifact and stuff like that. Again, that's why we're going to the inconclusive side. When I look at the suprapubic region, I'm also looking for free fluid there, of course. And this is one that it can be a little tricky at first. I've noticed, though, when people sit upright for a while, I will scan that one first because I notice a lot of free fluid develops in there before I'll see in the right upper quadrant, left upper quadrant. So before long, when they're laying down, I'm going to try and scan that suprapubic region first in those cases when I have high index of suspicion there versus scanning it later if they've already been supine. One thing to think about is if you're worried about an open book pelvic fracture at all, which really we should be doing these, especially since it's being taught by different organizations, not to name any names, but when they encourage you to do pelvic x-rays, sometimes it's not very possible to do the chest x-ray or pelvic x-ray because the patient's not stable enough to wait for radiology to get in there, do their stuff. You know, if I have suspicion for it, I really shouldn't mess with the pelvis, like rocking the pelvis, stuff like that, because that's just asking for bleeding issues to arise. So instead of doing those types of things, rocking the pelvis or pushing down hard, especially if you have multiple people doing it, you're really risking breaking those clots and causing worsening bleeding. Instead, what I want to do is I want to try and focus in on just measuring the pubic symphysis. Now, this is not a perfect exam. Just like any ultrasound exam, there are limitations. But with those good AP compression, open book pelvis fractures, you're going to see that widening of the pubic symphysis. The type we're worried about are type 2 and 3. And the reason why that matters is because those types, you're going to have a 25 millimeter or 2.5 centimeter, depending on how you just want to measure, but it's the same number, widening. And the reason why that matters is because that's significant widening there, and that matches the picture. These are people who need to have a pelvic binder wonder. And if you see that on your exam of the pubic symphysis, you see that significant amount of separation, okay, treat it like it's a pelvic fracture and go from there. Let whoever know that you're going to send this to, that this is what you're looking at. And this is such an easy skill. This is one of the quick things. You're already down looking at the bladder. You're pretty much right up the pubic symphysis. Just go a little bit further in and just check that out. Once you're a little more inferior, right on the pubic symphysis, this is very easy to do. It's very quick to measure, and it's just a natural transition. All that stuff said, these are things you're going to have to practice just like any other skill. The EFAS, to really get good at it, it takes time. You know, you're usually looking at least 25 scans before you're at least somewhat competent in it. But really, as we've talked about in other podcasts, it probably takes even more than that, especially until you start seeing a certain amount of positive exams with it. But it's very quick and easy when you're looking for black pointy stuff, you know, that free fluid collection, that there's a pretty good sign that this is it. But again, you got to be careful about the negatives and repeat your exams or confirm with other testing. So it's just CT. It just depends on the clinical context. I'm not trying to tell anyone specifically to do a certain thing because it always varies and you really have to apply with what you're seeing. But ultimately, when I'm looking at this, I'm looking right upper quadrant, left upper quadrant, suprapubic. Then I move on to the heart. Now, if I can, I want to use the subxiphoid approach. And a lot of times, I'd be using the same probe all the way through just because it's easy, it's quicker. You know, now with a new machine I have, it's very easy to make that transition. It doesn't really take up much time. But if I don't have that particular machine available, it can take a while to flip out. In fact, the one I was training people on today, I had to take the whole thing apart. And really, after the first group, I kind of moved on and realized that I could do everything on most of our models because our models are nice and thin and, you know, well-structured, that I could easily get away with just doing the curvilinear probe. But in most of my patients that I see, I really can't get away with that. So you have to recognize those differences patient to patient and realize when do you need a linear probe, when do you need the phased array probe, and when do you need the curvilinear probe. Because all of them are going to have their unique roles. But if I can, I'm going to sneak away with the curvilinear probe because it's all at the same time, one fell swoop, looking subxiphoid. And the way I describe it to students when I'm teaching them, it's like I'm trying to scoop out the heart. So I've got my curvilinear probe or phased array probe, it doesn't matter. And it's like a big spoon. And I'm trying to scoop it under their chest, under the rib cage there. And I'm wanting to try and scoop out their heart. It's quite the visual. But when you do it that way, you will see the heart so much better. And if I can't get it there for some reason, maybe the stomach's too big, whatever, switch to a different view. Now, another thing, if you notice that the stomach is insufflated, whether it's because someone was vigorously bagging them or because they just had, you know, a case of beer and a large pizza that they ate by themselves, okay, when it comes time to you have intubated and put an OG tube or whatever, you know, down, after you suck everything out, take a look at the those views again, because you'll notice that a lot of times you can see the heart better. Now, you don't have to wait then. You could do a parasternal short or long axis view, but depending on what's going on in your resuscitation, you may not have access to those views. So really, again, it's all about clinical context, but those are just some quick tips of some things that I've learned along the way that hopefully will make your next scan a little bit easier. Finally, with lungs, again, we're going to talk about this more with Fritz later, but just make sure that you are scanning across multiple ribs. The reason why is because it's pretty easy to miss when you're doing one point, to miss that small pneumothorax. Also with the hemothorax, you're really looking down when you're looking at your upper quadrant views. I notice though that sometimes it's hard to see it well, and you may have to switch to a phased array to really get into those crevices to notice the hemothorax. But again, it's going to make sense with the clinical picture. A lot of times you're going to be looking for that type of stuff. Ultimately though, what you're trying to do is you're trying to see everything in detail. You're trying to do this rapidly though. This should be something that, especially when you get good at it, is only going to take a minute or two in a lot of cases. Now, given some patients are just going to be really hard, or you're going to need to do things slightly different, that's totally cool too. But the idea is to keep this exam as short as possible and to help really get our patients where they need to go. So in a nutshell, main things are like little tips and tricks that I'd recommend is if the patient's been supine, check the right upper quadrant first. If they've been actually sitting upright, check suprapubic first. But again, clinical context there, just like everything else. Next thing to do is make sure you're fully visualizing the fields that you need to look at. Again, we'll include in the show notes about some of the details, the sites you can go to so you can properly learn the EFAS, because this is just a little extra stuff. When you do the suprapubic view, make sure you're including both transverse and longitudinal. And then after you've got that, around the same time you're doing that, take a look at the pubic symphysis and see about any signs of an open book pelvic fracture, such as that widening of the pubic symphysis there. Finally, when you're looking at the heart, try and stick with the same probe if you can. If you can't, sometimes you may have to do other maneuvers, such as decompressing the stomach when you get all the stomach contents out, and then you may get a better view after all. But in a nutshell, this is all easy, straightforward stuff. You just have to do it and you just have to practice it. All right. Like I said, this was really quick. Hopefully some of the students who were there are listening to this so they can get a little refresher and also see some of the evidence of what we're doing and why we're doing it. But until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.